Solve, secure, protect. Look to Patel for the independent thinking and cross-disciplinary focus it takes to advance security and safety in a changing world. They provide their clients with integrated solutions that secure our nation and help solve challenges within infrastructure, environment, emerging threats, and deployable mission-ready technology. Their teams leverage their deep expertise to develop science and technology for a healthier, safer, and more sustainable world. Visit Patel.org to learn how Patel makes the impossible possible. Welcome to From the Crow's Nest, a podcast on electromagnetic spectrum operations, or EMSO. I'm your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows. Thanks for listening. In this episode, we are recording from the exhibit hall of AOC 2022, and each day this week, we are releasing special episodes with key guests and the speakers at the show. Earlier this week, we released an episode with John Knowles, editor-in-chief of the Journal of Electromagnetic Defense. Yesterday was Mr. David Tremper from the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. And today, I am pleased to have two guests with me. The first guest is going to serve as my partial co-host, Mr. Bob Andrews. He is the AOC Global Events Director, and he has also a former board member for the Association of Old Crows. I also have with me Eric Bamford. He is the AOC International Region 1 Director on the AOC Board of Directors, but he has 27 years of experience with the Norwegian Armed Forces. He's been working on EW since 2001, and he's currently serving in the post as Principal EWO for all the Norwegian Armed Forces, a function placed in Royal Norwegian Air Force Air Combat Center. Former postings include Branch Head Army EW with Norwegian Army, and Operational EW background is in Land EW with a focus on Comms EA, including operational deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. With that, I want to welcome both of you to From the Crow's Nest. Thanks for joining me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, pleased to be here. Yeah.
Eric, well, I wanted to start off with you. You know, we're finishing up here on day three. Had a very interesting keynote session this morning where we talked a lot about building relationships as a key way of working with bureaucracy. And of course, you know, when we think about working with bureaucracy, moving technology from development to the field, we oftentimes think of think about it in country, whether it's US or UK or another European country or Norway. But I wanted to bring you on the show because I really wanted to talk more to our international partners and talk about how do you build relationships cross-country, cross-transatlantic, trans-Pacific with your allies and partners, and get your perspective on what jumped out at you in the conversation on building relationships as a way to innovate.
Just to start off with a caveat here, and that is that these are actually my views and based on my own experience on building that relationship. So on the North Atlantic or Euro-Atlantic way of doing this, there is a big difference between the single country American side of it and the European multitude of countries and languages that you need to come across. Mm-hmm. It all starts with the alliance. NATO as the alliance on the European side is key to this. And then you have the next level, and that's the bilateral or multilateral interaction. And then you need to go all the way down to the personal interaction. That is where, you know, you do the influence towards the individuals and discuss things with the individuals that then go back to capitals and feed this new understanding across all the nations so that we become interoperable and we actually build a requirements base that makes us interoperable in a war fighting scenario. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's there are different layers and they all need to kind of line up correctly to get the interoperability piece correct.
One of the technology sessions was about standards, and it got me thinking on this idea of relationships. One of the points that was raised with David Tremper yesterday on yesterday's podcast, he talked about, you know, you have all these standards. And the important thing to focus on sometimes is translation between standards. My mind went to organizations and the need to translate not language per se, but translate relationships or translate processes between the standards and the bureaucracies that we have set up. What are some of your thoughts on the need for maybe better translation between organizations, partner countries?
So the NATO approach on standards is kind of twofold. It is as civilian as possible and as military or bespoke as necessary. So that means that in reality, you want to use as much of the industry standards up to the point where you need to then add that top layer that is required to do military interoperability. So I think that is the key to both reduce the bureaucracy of NATO, but also to engage industry as much as you can.
And that's in the form of STANAGs a lot, which pan NATO STANAGs. So there's the interoperability issues are across all the STANAGs help reduce the interoperability problems because everyone adopts them.
So. On that note of standards or STANAGs, NATO's standardization agreements, it's NATO has approximately just short of 2,000 STANAGs, of which 45-50 are what we call operational STANAGs, which is the doctrine, the concepts, the tactical publications, and then the rest of them will be some type of either information exchange requirement standardization or formatting or technical aspects on integration, and in NATO it's the heavy bureaucracy of keeping standards up to date as well is a big strain on the nations. So anything on the standardization side that can be as civilian as possible will actually reduce the bureaucracy of the military organization as well. So that's the way to go.
One of the, I think, positives of this show was being able to start the show off with a NATO perspective. We had General Badia, who is leads the NATO Transformation Command, and he has some very strong words for how we proceed, forward in the alliance. What jumped out at you from his presentation?
So. One of the things I absolutely noted during his presentation was that he said ACT will be the custodian for standards. And I love it because, getting custodians for standards in NATO is a big challenge. Normally, you will have to have a host nation, and a host nation in NATO on standard ownership or custodianship is either a nation or a NATO body or entity. So when he came across and he said, ACT will be the custodian for the standards and do that drive. That is it's a relief for the nations, and it's actually a possibility to go on with some of the standards that have been kind of tough to get people on board to do, because the custodianship doesn't fit the different nations. It belongs to on the command side.
But. That's a great thing he is going to do, because it takes some pressure off the nations to provide that custodian work. It's ongoing constantly, and it's a big load on many nations.
And he made a very good point in describing the need for standardization as well, because he made the comparison of the American side of the alliance versus the European side of the alliance, where he talked about the multitude of systems. For instance, he said 26 types of fighter jets in the European theater. Mm. And that's where the standards come in. The standards come in to actually align logistics, align how we use things in operations, align the information exchange between these 26 platforms that are very diverse. That is kind of the way to go, instead of forcing everybody to buy from a specific vendor.
Hello, everyone. I want to take a short break to thank Battelle for their continued support for our From the Crow's Nest podcast. It's always great to hear from them, and I am pleased to be here with Rusty Cole-Morgan, Navy veteran and division manager at Battelle. Rusty, thanks for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity.
You've had an interesting career with extensive stints in the Navy and industry. What brought you to Battelle, and how does your experience align with Battelle's mission?
Yeah, thanks for that, Ken. And I did have a very rewarding career as a Navy pilot. And as I transitioned through a number of companies in industry, I continued to have great experiences because I got the chance to work alongside eye-watering technical talent. What I'm most excited about at Battelle is how our campus is literally surrounded by an impressive depth of relevant applied researchers. That uniquely embedded in-house research capability serves as a foundation as we focus on solutions to the world's hardest problems. We strive to create a better world through science, and the RavenStar technology is the latest example of a hard problem with wide society benefits.
In the past, we've heard here on From the Crow's Nest from your colleagues, Doug Thornton and Molly Engel. They provided some intriguing insights about the RavenStar antenna. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about the challenges of this trade space and what you're trying to address with this game-changing technology?
Well, the bottom line is that users have had to sub-optimize their capabilities and needs with traditional design approaches in the RF spectrum. Traditionally, electronic warfare and command and control users want a number of capabilities that create a challenging design space. Those needs are typically long ranges, maximum throughput, and low probability of intercept, low probability of detection. They want those ranges for more effective operational reach or standoff, and they want more throughput for the increased data that leads to actionable intelligence. And those tight control of the emissions, they want those for either maximizing energy on a particular bearing or limiting the ability to detect or interfere with their emissions. It's not an easy trade space, but the flexibility of the RavenStar architecture gives them more of what they want operationally.
So what does the RavenStar do that makes it optimized across these critical performance needs, and how does that stand out from traditional approaches?
Well, our frequency agility gives operators flexibility to work an ultra-wide portion of the spectrum through a single low-swap software-defined aperture. RavenStar co-designed extremely wide-band aperture arrays with co-located advanced electronics. And this allows a compact, frequency-flexible RF solution. Our approach minimizes conventional antenna feature trade-off and allows significant design flexibility for delivering the spectrum dominance that's needed.
We've been tracking this program here on the show. How mature is RavenStar today?
We put it at a TRL 6 after testing that we've done in December of 2023, and continuing into this year, we'll do field tests, accompany lab demonstrations, and development performance on formal efforts with different DoD customers, all that are pointed toward a continued maturation of the RavenStar design. They show the RavenStar's ability is to support all domain missions that require multiple communications.
Well, thank you, Rusty, for joining me here on the show. It's always great to hear from the Battelle team. And now it's time to get back to our show.
So some of the conversation this week obviously has been about current NATO operations, obviously having to do with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. What are some of the things that we can take out of this week in terms of lessons that we need to be learning or we have been learning from a NATO perspective in terms of working together better and against a common adversary?
So since 24th of February, there has been I did actually say shock, but that's not what I meant. You know, it's been an eye opener. But the thing is, it's the need to get, or the sense of urgency on getting the interoperability piece correct right now. That is where we need to go. And that's also where the standardization process is actually the train that we need to get on board. And we need to actually get capitals to get on board with the standardization as well. Because standardization in NATO is when you have a standard that goes out to the capitals for ratification, you know, you might get back that you have only half the nations on board. Whereas you need more and more all the nations on board as well, so that it becomes a real standard and not a standard among a enclosed environment.
I think what's happened also is that because of of the conflict. It's forced the nations to start collaborating together and working together much quicker than would happen under peacetime conditions. And that's a big plus. But it also draws politics really from country to country on what they will do.
So, I mean, we're coming out of a pandemic where the majority of the countries have also shown the ability and the political will to put in effect emergency laws. So, and going directly from, or more or less directly from a pandemic into a war in Europe, you know, the political appetite as well is in place to actually make considerable changes.
Yes, I fully agree. Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it. All the countries within NATO, certainly, the collaboration and the closeness and the will to work together and solve the problem is a big change. And it's great to see. That's what NATO is there for. And I'm pleased to see what's happening. I'm not pleased to see that we have a conflict, but it's accelerating some of the objectives that NATO have for collaboration. So I think it's good.
I think the key point you said there, Bob, was accelerating a change on that, and that's important because oftentimes we understand that there's a problem or some issue we need to address, but we don't have that forcing function to really get there as quick as we need to, and to see the acceleration take place has been good. I want to talk a little bit about training within NATO. One of the conversation points we often get into is the importance of really getting the warfighter involved in the operational relevance of technology. And oftentimes that doesn't happen until you're in the battle space. And that's why training is so important. But sometimes training is, you're kind of searching for a certain conclusion to the training or a certain lesson from the training, and it doesn't always necessarily give you the real world training that you're looking for. Could you talk a little bit about training in NATO? What are we learning here in with the current operations that you think will improve our trainings to make us more prepared and to keep that acceleration moving?
Yeah. So in NATO, EW hasn't been a training discipline, and that has actually been a challenge for NATO. EW has been pushed out on the nations, despite that, we've actually had the NATO Dukes, the joint EW Corps staff that operates out of Yeovilton, and they provide EW training for NATO exercises for the MOU partner nations, and then for the rest of the alliance partners as well. They have a multitude of training days across the year. You know, they are constantly out traveling, so it is a tough job for that unit to provide EW training across the alliance. Then you have all the issues on EW live training, and that's the regulatory role for Spectrum across Europe. So that limits kind of the effect of live training. You have training courses at, for instance, like the NATO School in Oberammergau, which is another MOU organization. So it's an accredited NATO entity, but it's not NATO in real life. So they actually have a couple of courses that have been growing over time. And the latest addition to the EW portfolio is the NATO EMO course, which an EMO is then the NATO equivalent term of EMSO in the US. But that is actually driven by the EW community. The startup was tiresome in getting the other communities to come in with mentors, speakers, instructors, and so on. So we have to do a cultural change across the stovepipes of Spectrum Management, NavWar, EW, and actually come together and make this work in a coherent way in how we approach Spectrum in campaign and operations.
Where does EW sit within the NATO structure at the moment? At the moment, I know it changes, but where is it heading now? Because EW obviously has become raised its or ha- has been elevated because of the conflict. Oh, yes. And so is there a focus point within NATO's structure for EW?
So the focus point will be the NATO Dukes. Right. So they are the main provider, and they also provide then policy officers that go in and augment these staffs when necessary. And they also then support the NATO school with SMEs, along with some of the nations. Yeah. But you will see that there is only a handful of nations that actually do support both man the Dukes and also bring speakers and SMEs to the NATO school. So that is a constant challenge to actually get the right people, because the right people are few, and they are, you know, they are occupied both nationally and with all other chores that are about. So that is kind of the weakness of doing a course like that without having an in-house knowledge base to actually execute a course there and then.
What's shown as well is I know that there's been a big upgrade to the Duke's equipment, but they are stretched to the limit, and you only have one, you know, EW training capability across the nations, and say it's only the nations that subscribe to Dukes that use it. So we have a shortfall in capability because that Dukes is overloaded. They are really very much overloaded.
So the partner nations or the MOU nations supporting the Dukes just recently climbed from 12 to 13. Just to correct, it is not just the MOU nations that actually have access to using Dukes, but it's a logistic bit. So they actually do support nations beyond the MOU as well.
Okay.
They just have to pay for the logistics and so on themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
But the primary focus is actually the big NATO exercises. Yes, they are stretched. They are really stretched, and the current technology is going out, and we need to ensure also that they have the manning to operate the old equipment while getting the knowledge base up and running on the new equipment without actually having a proper gap there, because we do not have the time right now to actually gap EW training.
Correct. Yeah.
How do they address workforce development on a NATO scale? Because we always have long had an issue with workforce development in EW, and I would imagine NATO is basically dealing with every single member country who also has that same problem. Are there initiatives that NATO can implement to either encourage certain paths or certain developments with their member states, or you know, set a certain standard for professional development, or how do they work on that front?
So the new NATO EW policy, I'm not spot on if I say it's out right now, or it's either just come out or it's just about to come out, and that has a full section of policy statements that goes to the command structure and what the command structure should be able to do, and also to the nations. So NATO on a day-to-day basis doesn't really have a big force available. It is the nations then provide the NATO force structure. And that's why that chapter in the EW policy, NATO's EW policy on expectations to the nations, that is an important piece of work. Then you have the NATO defense planning process that then put capability goals that are tailored to each nation. So in that document, you will find specific tailored targets also on EW to your nation. And that's kind of how NATO informs and puts requirements on the different nations.
Yeah, so really what that's saying is that professional development side of it is down to the nations.
It is down to the nations.
Under a NATO policy guidance.
Yeah, that is down to the nations.
Yeah, okay.
Great, well, that is all the time we have for today's episode. I want to thank my guest, Eric Bamford, and Bob Andrews for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest in our special edition of AOC 2022 Day 3. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
That will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Bamford and Bob Andrews, for joining me here on the show. Don't forget to review, share, subscribe to this podcast. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners, so please feel free to share your thoughts and recommendations. That's it for today. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Battelle, the world's largest independent, not-for-profit, applied science and technology organization. Since 1929, their mission has been to translate scientific discovery and technology advances to benefit society. Through markets such as health, environment, infrastructure, industry, and national security, Battelle has been delivering cutting-edge solutions that impact the well-being of the world and help keep us safe at home. To learn more, go to battelle.org/connect. That's BATTELLE.org/connect.